Don't
Rog.
Do it, Rog. Don't Rog do it, Rog. If you're listening, Rog, don't do it, please. Don't do
what
it.
What do we think of it?
Begging you.
There
don't
is
do
an
it.
Unwritten rule as an Irish person, and you know that, Rog. That is, do not take that job.
Joe presents House of Rugby, together with Bank of Ireland, proud supporter of the four Irish provinces.
Hello and welcome back to House Rugby, together with Bank of Ireland. I'm Greg O'Shea and I'm joined by the lovely Lindsay Peat, of course. Good morning, how are you?
Good morning, how are you?
Good, how was your weekend?
Had a great weekend, sure, I saw you at the game.
We did, we watched the game together.
And
we'll get stuck into that in a minute. Jason, how are you, sir?
Just third wheeling it here, yeah, as usual, yeah.
As always, yeah.
Yeah, but you're comfortable, innit?
Yeah, you know, I'm used to it.
It's a good position for you. Now, we were at the game. Did you go to the game, Jason?
No, I didn't. I was too busy watching all the rest of the games, unfortunately.
Oh, so. Good stuff. Well, me and Lindsay, we didn't sit beside each other, but we were in the same section watching the Ireland-Australia game. And lucky we both didn't fall asleep, lads. What? The game was poor, wasn't it?
It was flat, wasn't it?
It was just flat. Really flat. It was 3-0, like a soccer game, until 60 minutes. And then we kind of took off when Bundy came on and Ross came on and Craig Casey sped up the game. But what did you make of the game as a whole, Lindsay?
I think we missed out on what could have been a really, really fast open game and a spectacle of rugby. And I don't know whether it was for Ireland the third game in a row and they were just flat. I can see the Australians being tentative because, I mean, they've been ebbing and flowing and peaks and troughs of good performances, poor performance, narrow losses. And I think they couldn't really afford to maybe go in with another hiding, leaving these autumn series, you know what I mean, going into a World Cup because they're a very proud nation. So they were just, they were like two wrestlers just hugging each other and nothing happening, really.
You know what I think it was just too, it was a proper test match, but in not in a good sense, because they were just like cancelling each other out. Do you know what I mean? There was Peter Manny spoke after it with Andy Farrell to the Irish media, and he was like, it was a proper dogfight, just everything was contested. And what they kind of said was a good teams win ugly, and in fairness, they did. They did win ugly. Like, so it is probably a good test match to have for Ireland, even though it wasn't that great as a spectator. What do you think, Jason?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think in years gone by, that's a match we probably might have lost. Mm. And I think if you look back in particular the first half, the defensive effort from Ireland was incredible. And, you know, like the All Blacks used to do it. South Africa have done it for years. If we want to go on next year, and we're not trying to jinx anything, if we want to go on and win a World Cup, if we want to win a Six Nations, you have to win ugly.
Yeah.
I mean, you can say the referee wasn't great. I think he did his best. I think it's unfair to blame Ben O'Keefe because I think the style in which Australia played, a lot of indiscipline. I mean, how many bloody neck rolls was there? They got two yellow cards that they get. They could have been more, so they dragged us down to their level. We, as I said, probably looked a bit laboured, you know, tough. We had a tough series. First game was against the world champions at the end of the day, you know.
Yeah. Not sure you recover for that,
yeah, exactly.
In 2 weeks.
I don't think there's, like, it's not something I wouldn't dwell too much in that game. I could just go, look, lads, we're 3 from 3. It just shows you the standard we hold Ireland at now. We're kind of a little complaining a little bit. We beat the world champions, we beat Fiji, and we beat Australia.
Yeah.
A clean sweep of Southern Hemisphere teams.
We expected, I was watching, everyone in the crowd just expected to win. We're like, why aren't we scoring loads of tries now? Why isn't this like a magic spectacle? Do you know what I mean? So that is a really good place for us to be, especially that Johnny Sexton pulled out in the warm-up. He had a little calf injury. So like a couple of months ago, if we said, Johnny Sexton's going to pull out, we're playing Australia, probably going to lose.
Yeah.
And like we all expected to win. And what did you make of Jack Crowley getting called up into the 10 jersey?
I mean, like, come on, think about it, lads. He's 21 years of age. His first start against Australia. I know they're not the powerhouses they used to be, but they're still one of the best teams in the world. It's still bloody Australia.
Yeah.
He came in so late, he had to wear Johnny Sexton's jersey. You know, that's how late it was. There was no mind games there. Johnny did the warm-up. If you look back and you see Ireland's tweets, I was like, what's going on? Because they had a tweet up like 10 minutes before the announcement. And there's Johnny doing the handshake with the referee and the Australia captain before the game. He's all ready to go. And then all of a sudden, Johnny Sexton's out, Jack Crowley's in. You're like, what?
Yep.
So, like, not only to bring a 21-year-old 10 who's making his first start, who only has a handful of games for Munster, for him to come in that late into a full Aviva Stadium, into the test arena against Australia. Come on.
And they tested him. Like, they were trying to, you know, there was late hits, there was, you know, fisticuffs after. They really targeted him now, to be honest. So, like, welcome to Test Rugby, Jack Crowley, do you know, between wearing, I'm sure, at one stage his idol's jersey, just in you go there. And then obviously Ross Byrne as well, testament. Obviously he finished the game off for us, you know, killed his cucumber and probably
some
put
kick. It was some kick.
Some kick. What about pressure? Do you know, just win us the game there. Now, you haven't played in 2 years, but up you step.
I know, what a baptism of fire for Jack Crowley to come in that late. Like, the mindset he would have to just switch. All right, now you're the out half for Ireland, your number one team in the world. Go out there and run the team against one of the best teams in the world. Like, it was such a baptism of fire. And I was kind of player camming him, and he was just bringing such a good attitude. I don't know if you saw it, Lindsay, but like,
yeah,
he'd be running over to get the ball. He'd be wrestling it off an Australian guy. Yeah. He'd be like, step up to Peter Manny. All right, let's do this. Like, he was really taking charge.
Yeah.
Which is what they seem to be saying about him in camp, that he really steps up to the mark.
And that was actually key. I think it's just before half time, so he could have went, you know, between himself and Pete to decide just to kick in front of the post, but they went to the corner for the line out. So again, he was kind of, yeah, took the ball, took responsibility, and he was like, yeah, what are we doing here?
Orders.
Absolutely. Yeah. So he stood up, and he stood up to the mark and putting up Gary Owens, trying to kick for space, relieving pressure. Like, he was a man who knew his detail, and that's key for a 10. Even just the basics. Like, he didn't put a foot wrong, but he didn't probably, again, Who lives up to Johnny Sexton in their first match? You know what I mean? But yeah. Listen, congratulations, Jack Crowley. I think you did an amazing job.
Yeah, well done, Jack. You did incredible. And shout out to Ross Byrne as well. I don't know if he was sitting at home in, like, where, I don't know where
having
he was.
Having a cup of tea.
Having a cup of tea in South Dublin. And then Andy Farrell gives him a text, get your arse into the stadium, lad.
Where's them Nike boots? Bring them with you, you know?
But, like, cool as cucumber, as you mentioned. Like, yeah, just his kick, it wasn't easy.
No.
It was a good bit over on the sideline. And I watched him coming across, I think, Jack or James Ryan was the captain at the time, and they just pointed straight at the post, right, give it to me, and slotted it over. Grand, like.
And he didn't take a big run up.
No.
John Wayne, and there was no faffing or lining up with his eyes. Like, he just, as he was running up, I was going to go, right, there's two options here. He's going to absolutely, like, majorly put this over, or he's going to go, like, wayward wide. So I was like, now, not that I didn't doubt him. Like, I think he's a man who should have really gone a lot further with Ireland. But the only thing for me is, like, I suppose Johnny is passing and on the gain line, and he's just a bit more of a playmaker. And I think if Ross Byrne now over the next 10 months can show that, which he's done with Leinster, can show that in an Irish jersey if he gets the opportunity. But lads, what, like, where do we go now with the Guinness Six Nations? Is this going to be used that we go and win it? Or is it another five games that Andy Farrell and his, and my cat, you know, blood fellas? Because then you've only three tests before a World Cup.
Yeah.
But it's such a headache. Like, I don't know how many years it's been or how many seasons it's been since Ross Byrne got into an Irish jersey, but it's been a while.
2 years, I think.
Yeah, he was fairly out of favour. Like, and I know him personally in the last couple of years. He's been itching. He was on the podcast last year. He's been itching to get back into the Irish squad. And for him to just be so cool and calm, that's kind of the head you need as a 10. He was just so confident, and he's doing it week in, week out with Leinster. So now his name is back in the mix. Yep. Like, it's such a problem for Andy Farrell. Like, and Joey's sitting at home and like, oh no, there's another guy now who's battling me for 10. Like, what do you make of all that, Jason?
It's going to be interesting to see, as I said, you know, when we get to the World Cup. I mean, we mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, that time New Zealand won it back in 2011, and they went down to their fourth choice 10 by the time they got to the final. Stephen Donnellan was out fishing and got a phone call like the week before and going, hey, fancy playing the World Cup final? And he hit the pressure kick. So, like, you can only bring, he's only going to bring three 10s. So, like, you've got, obviously, Johnny, number one. Then you've got Jack Crowley, Joey Carberry, Ross Byrne, Hardy Byrne, Jack Carty. A lot of guys there, so there's only one spot there. I personally think it would be Sexton, Carberry, and another.
Yeah.
So, but who another is. But even if, like, as we see with Johnny and Joey's injury record, if we lose one of them, now hopefully we don't lose Johnny, or touch wood, but if we lose one of them, like, it's nice to see there is someone there, because we did not expect Ross Byrne to be even in the squad, and all of a sudden he's kicking the winning penalty against Australia for us.
Exactly. That's what Andy Farrell said in the post-match interview, that as a test run, it's a really good thing. It's ideal for Ireland to lose Johnny Sexton like that, because that could happen next year in the World Cup.
Yeah.
Now they've done it. Now they know they can win a game against a top-tier nation losing Johnny. So
Johnny and Joey,
yeah.
I fear for Joey, really, if I'm honest. Do you know,
I still think he's going to be there, because I just think he's played the most amount of minutes. He's done it for us before against big teams. He's done it against New Zealand. I know his injury record isn't the best, but I still think, I'm not just saying that as a Munster
fan. No, but
fan,
if you,
I'd have Joey there no matter what, whether he's on the bench or whether someone else beats him to it in the big games in the World Cup, I still think he's in that squad.
Okay, he's still in the squad, but worst case scenario, right? I pose this to you. Joey Carberry has an injury riddled 10 months, right?
Yes.
Like, where are we going to get? You know, touch wood, he won't. Do you know what I mean? But, like, we're on borrowed time. Like, James Lowe before the game, right? And he's kind of like, you know yourself as players, like, you're like, right, someone's in that jersey. You know, Mac Hansen's done well. Jimmy O'Brien, excuse me, comes in. You know, lads have taken opportunity. And then James Lowe's sitting there itching to come back in, and he's telling, oh, I've 2 weeks to come in at Ulster. And again, he knows he's on borrowed time. So I don't wish this on Joey, but what I'm saying is, we're obviously now talking about a load of tens that could be in there and putting up their hands. Like, what happens to the lads who have that really tough time over the next 10 months and don't get opportunity to play?
That's true. Yeah. I don't know. I just think Joey has enough in the bank. I think he's enough in the bank. it's happened a few times. I know we probably shouldn't have brought him to the last World Cup when he was clearly wasn't fit, like it was a mistake. But if he's fit and he's ready, ready to go.
And he's versatile.
Yeah, I think he's got enough credit at the bank, I think.
No, personally. Definitely. If Sexton and Carberry are fit, they're both going to go. It's that third spot, I think. But talking about the game just before we move on, not too many fellas stepped up for like, oh my God, unbelievable game. Obviously, Ringrose is always safe as house. He was unbelievable again. Delivers.
Yeah, McCluskey was good again.
McCluskey was decent. Doris had a great game, carried well, showed a kind of different element to his game. Craig Casey, I thought, was really good when he came on.
Yeah, he was. So was Bundy, to be fair to him.
Bundy got his try back on the big stage.
Did you forgive him?
I did. Yeah, I was still kind of angry in the first few minutes, and then I was like, okay, I'll forgive him.
Yeah.
can we just point out as well, Bundyaki must have been just eating weights for the last 8 weeks, because somehow he's after getting even bigger. I remember just seeing him coming on, and he's standing on the sidelines, and it's like, you could land a plane on his back.
Yeah, his neck disappeared.
He didn't have much else to do for the last 8 weeks, so he just pretty much ate weights and ate his Weetabix essentially.
Imagine being an Australian player in the 60th minute and Bundy Key coming on fresh and 8 weeks of built up tension.
I'm full of energy. I was like, oh God, I'm glad I didn't stand in front of him.
He's out for 8 games or something like that. Yeah.
Eight weeks.
But good to see you back, Bundy. Fair play. And good to see you getting on the try, getting a try and getting on the score sheet.
Yep.
So that's Ireland done now for the Autumn Nations, isn't it?
Well, little shout out to Joe McCarthy, who got his first cap.
And Joe McCarthy,
the baby faced man mountain.
Congratulations, sir. So Ireland are in a good place. Ugly win, but we'll take it. 13-10. Well done, guys. And before we move on to the other Autumn Nation series, and I also want to talk about the Nick Whitehead injury assessment. But we had our very own Pat chatting to Peter O'Mahony during the week. Pete was talking about the Aviva Ireland's Christmas donation drive with partner Food Cloud. So here's the chat Pat had with Pete.
A kind of great year in terms of progress for you guys, because I know Johnny would say in the past, and you would say when you're up for press conferences, you saw stuff building, but it's great this year to have stuff to kind of cling on to, even that triple crown and that win over New Zealand. It's a great kind of reward for all the stuff that you guys have been doing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. It's great. Obviously, you know, the triple crown was hugely important to us. You know, some great performance in the Six Nations. Obviously, New Zealand was special. You know, there's no other way of talking about that. You know, it was great to be involved, and an important piece of history for us, which is, you know, it's something nice to have on the CV. And you know, against South Africa, you know, a huge performance, but. We certainly feel there's a lot more to go on us, you know, which is, you know, probably the best feeling to have after a year like that. You know, all the stuff that we've looked back on that we didn't quite get right, or that there's room to improve. You know, it's a really great feeling to have, to really keep the appetite there. You know,
I wanted to just bring you back to that. I suppose a great series you guys had against Australia in 2018, and. Almost sort of like skipping to the second test, because I always just remember like the Hooper and Pocock kind of combination, and they caused a bit of chaos in that first test, and things, the back row was changed up, you were kind of put in at open side and stuff. Do you remember much of the talk that week? And it was almost trying to like Pocock proof Ireland as much as you could, but great battles, weren't they? Do you remember much of the build up to that second test?
Yeah, I do. I remember, you know, obviously, as you said, they'd given us hassle and something we previewed. And, you know, it's all well and good to preview teams and you know, put plans in place. But it's trying to actually implement these when you're dealing with guys who are the very best in the world at their jobs. And, you know, so we knew if we were going to win a series, we needed to get these guys sorted. And, you know, in the second test, I think we dealt with them certainly a bit better. You know, you have to have a heightened sense of awareness about guys like Michael Cooper. You know, when he's on the pitch, you know, you've seen some of his performances. Obviously, you know, certainly one of the best sevens in the world, and you know, has been doing it for a long, long time now. And you know, I'm sure they'll take a huge bit of confidence every time he's named in a 15. You know.
In terms of like, you know, like let's say Jesus, like you've been the top of the game for like, you know, well, like, you know, well over a decade now at this stage, and kind of playing test rugby for 10 years and stuff like, but for yourself, like sometimes you look at the end of that game and say, geez, Pete O'Mahony had a great game, but it's like the stats sometimes are never like, there's never going to be a Pete O'Mahony game where you had like 80 meters gained or anything like that. But What do you kind of see if you've had a good game, you walk off the pitch, like what do you like to tell yourself? I've at least done these two or three things for my team.
I mean, it's no secret, obviously, you know, line-out is hugely important. You know, winning ball, you know, attacking mall defense is very important to me. You know, I'd have a good understanding of our defensive plan and you know, I think these days for us, you've got to be all over most things though. You have to, you know, Andy's really encouraged us to get to understanding our game and our rugby and how we do it, and I think that's unlocked a little bit more for me about going after things and understanding why a bit more. So look, I mean, it's a tough question to answer, to be honest with you, but you know, you've always got things that you try your very best to implement that you think are the reason that you've been picked. You know, everyone's got that little bit of little niche or you know, corner. I wouldn't say that, but you know, everyone's picked for a reason. You know what I mean? And a lot of guys, maybe some guys don't, but a lot of guys understand and know that reason why. And that's what you've got to deliver first and foremost, is what you're really good at. We've all got to work on things that we know we're not quite as good as other guys, but the reason that you're involved in the team has to be what comes out first, you know, and is front and foremost. And you know, that's what I always try to deliver.
I wanted to kind of even then bring it back to like you're just a guy, like when you kind of see as well, like you kind of like Sean O'Brien used to be the same when he'd be playing as well. Like you get yourself into the games and you're kind of pumped up for these big moments as well. And that you can see how, I remember the Australia game, you came off the bench, big tackle and that big picture of you roaring. Like you're kind of one of those guys that kind of like heart in the sleeve is what people would say. Like, but I was kind of thinking back to the summer, like, and there's these moments where like you're kind of getting into it as well. I remember the big thing about Sam Kane and you guys chapping away at each other like that. But at the end of that series, do you guys kind of talk it out and like, you know, there is no hard feelings, is there? It's just you're the blood's up during a game, isn't that it?
I look, that's the extent of it. Yeah, look, the blood has to be up. You know, you're in a you know, high pressure, you know, high conflict, high contact zone. I mean, there's no other way to be. And yeah, look, this is part of rugby. You know what I mean? You know, there's always chat going on and, you know, unfortunately, some of it is picked up, some of it isn't. And at the end of it, it's all, 9 times out of 10, unless someone's taken real offence to something, it's forgotten about almost after the final whistle. You wouldn't even have to chat about it, you know what I mean? So that's just part and parcel of the game and the nature of the beast, I think.
It's a bit like me when I play Astro. I'm always cranky in the last 10 minutes of the game as I get tired.
Yes, absolutely, yeah, correct.
The Munster game down at Parky Creeve, and did you get a chance? Were you able to even go along to, you know, you weren't playing, or were you in Ireland camp and jealous not to be out there as well?
Yeah, no, I couldn't go, unfortunately. We're back in camps on Thursdays and watched in the Shelburne. Yeah, absolutely, hugely jealous of the lads. I would have loved to have even been there as a supporter. It looked like a great occasion. You know, it was only a couple of hundred metres from my house, and would have loved to have seen all the fans and stuff walking around the area and you know, obviously the whole occasion of it. You know, we've obviously a great history with the touring teams and that kind of thing, and to keep tipping away to that. And look, those days are, you know, they're special. I don't think I've ever had requests for tickets like for a game. I'd say we could have sold it 3 or 4 times over. It was bigger than New Zealand and Aviva. It was mentally the amount of tickets I was asked for, which is great, you know, and it was great for Cork as well. You know, we've an incredible fan base there, and it was great that they could wander down and you know, not have to travel very far home or wander home. And you know, good for Munster rugby as well. It was a win-win for everyone. GA, Munster, Irish rugby. You know, I think everyone benefits from an occasion like that.
The last rugby one I have for you is just the World Player of the Year nominations, like two Irish boys involved as well. like, just kind of what does that say about them? And as even sometimes I was saying they had five or six on the short list. Or anybody else you kind of expected to see on that short list as well?
Look, it's certainly a product of what those people have put in, and I think it's also a product of what the group has put in and the coaching staff has put in. Obviously, Andy has been nominated on a weekly, so you know, it's an accumulation, and I'm sure the lads would have said the same thing of lots of different factors, and I think just rewards for the people that have been named Player of the Year, young emerging Player of the Year, coach, you know, all those people absolutely deserved to be nominated, I think.
And then just the last one, just about the campaign as well. It sounds pretty good, like the Food Cloud initiative. It's just like, have you found out much about it yourself and happy to be involved and, you know, lend your name to it as much as you can?
Yeah, look, it's really great. I'd heard of the Food Cloud guys before, and, you know, given my interest in, you know, growing my own food and that kind of stuff, I'd often queried, even when we were in camp and stuff, you know, we're very well looked after, and there's almost a policy of, you know, food shouldn't run out for us and that kind of thing. And even restaurants and supermarkets, like, where does all this waste go? And you know, I would imagine, I don't know the figures, but the amount of food that's dumped is off the wall, I'd imagine, with the amount of, and at the same time, the amount of people that are hungry around the world, you know, not just in Ireland. And I think it's a great initiative, you know, to take food that's obviously on the way to waste and turn some of the grub they do and help people who are struggling. You know, it's a kind of a win-win on lots of fronts. And, you know, yeah, I'm delighted to be involved, to be honest.
Brilliant stuff. Well, listen, nice talking to you today.
Thank you. Cheers, Pat.
All right, lovely stuff as always from Peter Manny there. All right, another big thing that we wanted to talk kind of separately about with the Ireland-Australia game is this whole Nick White head injury assessment fiasco. To kind of give the download of what happened. So in the match, he got two separate knocks, one off Mac Hansen's hip and another one off Van de Vleer's knee, all unintentional, that just happened. He stumbled once. The camera saw that, everyone saw that, and then they went to look at that first incident and didn't see him stumble a second time, is what they're all coming out saying now. And based off the World Rugby protocols, if someone stumbles in any way that's a suspected concussion, you're supposed to come off the pitch. But they obviously let him go on the pitch because he passed his HIA, and this is where the confusion's coming out. And he's now out for 12 days based off this second stumble. And there's been uproar about it, that it's really poor player management, and it's obviously a bigger issue than just rugby.
Yep.
So what do we think?
Well, there was a lot of, I think there was an argument by Matt Williams about, you know, we leave it to the doctors and it's the science. It was clear Nick White was absolutely concussed, and you can see him down on his hunkers, if not on one knee, with the physio on the initial Mac Hansen. And he kind of just is blinking to try and refocus himself. And he sways as he's there. And I saw it straight away on the big screen. Obviously, we were there. And I was like, that lad needs to come off.
Yeah.
Like, he is absolutely goosed. So I think, yeah, there was two things. Like, Day's look and then the stumble. I think they're two big pointers to say, you know, get off the pitch. And I think if there's anything, whether you pass your HIA, you should always err on the side of caution and get that player off. Like, the game is bigger. Players are bigger than the game. Like, this is people's health and welfare. And it's kind of sad that every week we're pitching on some kind of drama around head concussion or concussion, excuse me. So, like, again, like, I just thought it was disgraceful that you would argue about the science. Science isn't, yeah, a lot of the time, granted, it's black and white. We can't compare someone's health to climate change. no offense. But do you know what I mean? Like I went back to college. I did science. My sister's science. I do agree with it. In the sense of, yeah, we apply it, but you have to apply
also human nature. So, for context, you're referring to what Matt Williams.
Sorry, I beg your pardon. Yeah.
Climate change science to head injury assessment science.
Yeah, and yeah. I'm absolutely right. And I was like this. And Rob Kearney had a great argument. It's not putting the game of rugby in a good light. You know,
no.
We've missed out. You know, we're here talking about Nick White and concussion again. There were so many beautiful spectacles and celebration of rugby over the weekend, and we're here again about people's health. Yeah. Err on the side of caution.
What Kearney said in the interview, or they kind of had a bit of an argument really on the Virgin Media, was that this is the biggest threat to rugby at the moment, this head injury stuff. And I completely agree with him. because it's bigger than rugby. Yeah. Poor Nick White now is sitting out for 12 days. And they did say he didn't show any symptoms afterwards and the next 2 days, but it doesn't matter. He's still got two massive knocks to the head. He's still a human.
Sure, he turned over the ball on that one when he carried. If you look at it closely, like he loses the ball in that contact. Like again, like two head knocks. Like what repercussions is that man going to have later in life?
I think the Jason, you've done a lot of research into it, haven't you?
I think the best way of looking at it, I mean, like we're here and the biggest talking point of the weekend is we're talking about Nick White. Now, we beat Australia. Right, so we're not talking about Nick White shouldn't have been allowed back on because he came on and won the game for him. We beat Australia and we're still, all we're talking about and all we're worried about is Nick White's health. Made no difference in the game, didn't affect us. I'm disgusted by Matt Williams' comments, to be honest with you. For him to come out and for him to say, essentially, you know, trust the science, forget about it, we're not entitled to speak about it. I mean, his eyes are clearly glassy. He actually stumbles 3 times. He wobbles. You can see he's completely out of it. Yep. He doesn't know where he is. I thought Joe Malloy handled it fantastically. He went back to the World Rugby guidelines and said that like there are two things that are in the guidelines. And if you spot them, that overrules the doctor. It overrules everything. You take them off. Now, if you're watching this as a young coach, as a young player, you don't have independent doctors at matches. That's what you have to go by. So if you see a kid or if you see a guy playing amateur rugby or whatever level it is where you're not in a big test arena, an international game, and you see them behave in that manner, they're off, they're done, they're finished. They ain't coming back on. It's quite simple. And I'm not a doctor. You're not a doctor. You're not a doctor. No. I don't need to be a bloody doctor to see that. Yeah. It's absolutely shocking. It's disgraceful. And it's going to kill our game. And it's continuing to kill our game because we're not being safe enough.
Yeah, that's what Matt Williams is saying, trust the science. And I get what he's trying to say, but the way he delivered it came across terribly. But I agree with John Malloy in the sense that the protocols are written in black and white. Mm-hmm. If you see someone stumble, take them off the pitch. That's it. Suspect a concussion, you're done, bud. I don't care if you feel $1 million. Like, so that is the scary part, that somehow they missed it. And there's like 60,000 people, there's live stream. Yeah. I'm like, how is he allowed back on the pitch just for his own health? Imagine being his family back home after seeing him stumble and he's back on the pitch. And it's written in black and white there, this is what we're supposed to do. Mm. So it's a bit of a mess up by the medical staff. Obviously, they didn't intend to like put him back on. They obviously missed it because they were reviewing the first one. So their intentions were right, but they just missed the second one. So I'm just glad that he's okay, to be honest.
I am too, but you know, it is sad. You know, it is sad. And like, I do agree, I do, to try and give him the benefit of the doubt, you understand what Matt Williams is trying to say. But at the end of the day, is it kind of coming this, you were trying to eradicate this macho image for rugby. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's a war of attrition, and the speed and the rate of collisions and the impact of the collisions now are huge. And we have to protect the players that play. And the same thing, come back to yourself. If you're a coach, we want the message to like err on the side of your players' welfare rather than the game.
Completely.
You know, people are essential to this, and it is bigger. The people in it are bigger than the game itself right now, and we need to manage it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. The doctors are trying their best, so it's not we're not killing the medical staff here now. It's just, it was a mess up, the things that happened. But my other kind of argument before we move on is, there's a perfectly good scrum half sitting on the bench as well for Australia. Like, just put him on.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Why risk it? Like, he's clearly had a knocked head. He stumbled. He's played a couple of minutes. All right, put the next guy on. Why'd you have him on the bench anyway?
And that's what the Autumn Series are for. Yeah. Like, we saw that with Johnny Sexton Grand. His was to do with his dead leg and not coming and back on time for that and not risking him. And this is greater than that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, use your players. They're professional players. They're paid to do it. Yeah. Like, trust them, you know?
Exactly.
The fact that he's been, the fact that he's been stood down for 12 days now since, and the fact that they said, oh, we missed the second one because we're reviewing it, it just goes to show they do make mistakes. So if you're not 100% sure, you take him off. Yeah. And this is not a good look for rugby.
No, it's not. But look, we could talk about it all day. Let's move on. We're obviously all very passionate about it, which is good.
Well, we love the game. Yeah. Exactly. Let us be clear on this. Yeah. We love the game. We love the people
and
in
we just
it.
Want it to be safer.
Exactly.
Yeah, we want it to last.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Before we chat about the World Rugby Awards, where Ireland just did fabulously over there. A couple of lads did really well. We'll talk about it in a second. But our very own Jason Hennessy spoke with Jamie Heaslip during the week, all about the November test and what he thought about it. So have a look at this.
I think you're seeing kind of Timothy put his hand up. I think Deegan is starting to come to the fore a little bit more and showing a little bit more versatility. He's a little bit more grown up and mature now. He's kind of had, you know, he broke through back in, what was it, 2016, I think it was, as World Player. Was he World Player of the Year? Nominated for World Player of the Year.
Yeah, that famous tweet where he said he was coming for your jersey.
Yeah, you know, and he's still yet to take it off anyone else. But he had to mature in that regard in terms of like underage rugby. Side note, underage rugby, if you're like one of the good guys, one of the bigger ones, it's very easy to put your head above the pulpit and stand out. Once you come out of the underage bracket, like look at the 10 position. Jack Crowley's going to get Johnny Sexton, who's been at top tier international level for at least 10 years. Everyone's good and they have experience on top of you, right? Yeah. So you just have to learn how to mature a little bit. But I think Max has done really well. Timmy done really well. I think Treadwell's done really well last week. I think McCluskey done really well. The thing is, I don't think McCluskey starts. You know what I mean? And then I don't think you put him on a bench, right? Because I think he lacks the versatility. He's very good 12, right? But I think he lacks the versatility to have him on the bench for a game unless you have other players that can kind of cover different positions. So you said Jimmy O'Brien. I think Jimmy O'Brien did himself a massive turn. Like, I don't even Jimmy expected to come on 13 for his first cap. You know what I mean? Like, so fair play. And he did unbelievably well. And then we can show, oh, actually, if you're Stoke, he can do a job at 13. Now, yeah, he got a little bit exposed in defensively, particularly when William Ruhu was on, and they were able to open the game up a little bit more, South Africa. But no one's as good as Gary Ringrose right now in that 13 channel in general. Who else stood out for me? Obviously, Crowley, I think, took his chances. I think Joey was a little bit pedestrian, which is something that you wouldn't say with Joey, because he's got magic feet. He's rapid, quick. But he seems to be going through the process as opposed to even prodding the line a little bit more, or having a bit more command or demanding about him. While Jack was barking at lads straight away and was taking opportunity himself. So I think he potentially is going to be really interesting to see how that goes. I think Joey's been ruled out this weekend. So, do you parachute Jack straight in? I think you do. And you say, right, boy, you know, now's your chance if you get it.
Looking back over the years playing Australia, obviously with that big famous win in 2011 at the World Cup, you played them, obviously you went to the Lions tour there in 2013, I believe. Any good stories from playing them over the years? I know they enjoy a few points as much as we do, like kind of anything happened on the pitch or anything off pitch with the Aussies, because I'd say they're a good crack to play against, first of all, and go out with it for a few things afterwards.
No major stories that I can disclose. We had some good times. We've anything had some good tours.
Anything on the pitch? Any kind of good moments on the pitch that you can remember?
Oh, my favorite. Well, I have two favorite moments, and it was that game you alluded to in Eden Park. Like, my two favorite moments is like coming off back at a scrum and seeing Stephen Ferris pick up Genia at the time and just marching back, and we all just piled in. Pretty nice. And then that same game, Quade Cooper was playing, obviously, and you know he's a hot stepper, and that game was the momentum in that last kind of 20. It swung in our favor. And I remember we kicked down the field and we're all running up, and Quade Cooper tries to sidestep a few guys. He sees Keane Healy prop in front of him, tries to sidestep him. And to say Keane opened him up was like, he just got him the perfect shot under, like he stepped and caught him just under the ribs, hoofed him up, didn't tip him. Legit tackle and technique was on point. But you can imagine like, that kind of power hitting at the right angle, right time. You know, you're talking about a guy who's 118 kilos at the time versus someone who's probably, 91, 2 kilos, something like that. It was a joy to watch. They're kind of that's probably the favorite moment. And actually, you know what a quite telling moment was when we drew against them. Back in, I think that was 2009. I think it was Keane Healy's actual first cap in Croke Park. And, it was kind of a bit of a common coming of a moment for a telling moment for a lot of us bubbling up, where we probably had struggled against them, and how we went to a clincher moment, scrum. I think it was last scrum in the game or close to last scrum in the game. And we do a set piece. And then I think it was Dricko scored to kind of to draw the game. That was a bit of a momentum shift for us, I think, in terms of confidence of they were the first on the kind of run the ladder we had to kind of consistently beat and get over. And then South Africa, and then the final one was New Zealand, which the lads are, you know, they have a generation of players now who don't know what it is to lose to New Zealand, which is a weird thing to say. But always enjoyed touring there. I always had a great time.
Great stuff. I got to ask you quickly before we finish up on the World Player of the Year. Obviously, that only came out there yesterday. A couple of surprises. The big thing I want to ask you was, well, as a former back row, forward number eight, no Gregory Aldries and no Ardie Sevilla. Does that surprise you?
Well, we'd have to look at who's on the selection panel, wouldn't we? To see, like, I'd love to know what the blend is between forwards and backs. And Northern Hemisphere versus Southern Hemisphere. But that's for another day, right? We can get into conspiracy theories later, Jason. But I think, look, I think it's a validation for all of them for the work that they're putting in. And someone asked me previously, like, you know, will that be huge for them? Like, I was lucky enough to be nominated a few times. It's nice, you know, and I've never won it. But talking to Johnny, he said it was pretty cool to be like, basically told you're the best player, right? But I think really these guys, they want trophies. They want medals, you know, in the cabinet at the end of the season. Like, it's a nice validation of this is, you're getting return on the work that you're putting in. You're a good player and might help with a contract negotiation, you know, it might help with commercial stuff. But, like, I don't think they really... I don't want to take away from it, but, like... They care about winning, you know. I've often said I think Johnny Sexton is the best player Ireland have ever had. Just look at what he has won. Just look at his own individual. I think it's the third time he's been nominated. He's won it once. He's the only Irish player to really win it in a professional era. I know Keith Wood won it very early on, but like that was not the professional era. I can tell you that right now. And the caliber of players these days is just insane. And then for Josh, I think it's amazing because I think he has been unbelievably consistent, which is you play as you train. So if you train with this guy, you're around him, it makes perfect sense. He is an unbelievable pro, unbelievably nice guy. Always putting the work in, always looking to grow, was probably too anxious early on in his career in terms of the pressure cooker environment and getting used to that and all that. And now he's kind of like, he's grown into it, right? And I think even some of his own comments, he knows he's a bit more relaxed in terms of the pressure cooker environment and how to deal with that and the expectation he puts on himself or the work that he needs to put in order to then be comfortable on the run into a game. But it's great, isn't it? Like, we have two Irish players up for World Player of the Year. We are the number one team in the world. We beat the world champions last week. It is a great position to be in. And I think we have to just flip the narrative a bit in terms of like, we never get past the quarterfinal or we're never good when we're favorites to like backing the side and actually wanting these guys to go forward, wanting them to do well, wanting to win the Six Nations and then roll into a really competitive World Cup.
Great stuff there, great stuff. Always good to catch up with the old pal, Jamie. Interesting comments there from him about the World Rugby Awards, and we're going to get on to that, but I like the way he said, and I think he's dead right in saying that, you know, Johnny won it, and we're going to get on to the fact that Josh won it last night, but those big players, guys like Josh and guys like Johnny Sexton, as brilliant as it is to win World Player of the Year, like, I mean, you're basically been told you're the best rugby player in the world, I think he's going to forget about that pretty quickly because he wants to win the Champions Cup this year. He wants to win the URC. He wants to win the Six Nations. He wants to win the bloody World Cup. So I like that. Interesting comments. Like, I think he's dead right in what he's saying there because it's all about team game, really, isn't it? It's all about winning trophies, not individual accolades.
Yeah, I think it was a testament. That's what he was kind of alluded to, a testament to the how successful Ireland are at the moment, you know, with the nominations. And, like, I think Josh was not, you know... Pat would have done an interview where 2 years ago he's struggling to get into the team and now 2 years later, you know, he's World Player of the Year and what he's won every Rugby Writers, Rugby Players Ireland and then European Player of the Year, was he not?
European Player of the Year as well, yeah.
But you know what? You could meet a nicer guy who's so grounded, thanked all his family, his friends, the players around him and his new wife, Sophie. He'd give you the time of day and he'd give you the shirt off his back, so... To be honest, Josh, on every level you deserved it, man. But I think it is testament to how successful Ireland are, even with Andy getting a nomination. And obviously Mark Hansen and Dan Sheen as well as and Johnny. So I think it's just testament to where Ireland are at the moment.
Yeah, well, massive congrats to Josh, of course, Josh van der Fleer, but also to Terry Kennedy.
Yes,
yeah, got World Rugby Sevens Player of the Year. So we had two lads who were the best rugby players in the world.
Yeah.
Like that, it just to me is nuts. Like, you know, and we've a load of nominations as well. So I'm just so buzzing for Irish rugby and for the lads, and because they're such good guys. I know Terry really well, obviously played with him for years, and I've met Josh a couple of times. I'd love to take it from him, but he's probably the nicest guy I've ever met. He's lovely, really well educated, good looking lad.
Well deserved as well, if you can say that, because Josh has been incredible. And can I just point out as well for any of our fans that are outside of Ireland? I saw a lot of comments because of everyone playing for different leagues. Josh van der Fleer was born and raised in Ireland. He's got Dutch grandparents. He's not South African or anything like that. Because I've seen a few of those comments.
Let us be clear here.
Just trying to be like salty, I suppose, and just annoys me. I mean, look, okay, he's born and bred. He's as Irish as they get, okay?
He's from Wicklow.
Yeah, it's his end of that. Like,
he's
from
Wicklow. Yeah, he's just Dutch heritage.
Just like, his Dutch grandparents. Yeah, like, exactly. But no, I mean, like, he's like, Josh has been phenomenal. Phenomenal. Like, you can't take it away from him. Terry Kennedy, how many tries has he scored?
He was 52 in 50 games or something ridiculous like that.
And they're not basic tries either.
He's playing a game or something.
Runs the pitch every time. Like, it's unbelievable. Scandalous. Yeah.
Do you think is he someone you'd like to see in the 15s game?
But this is a big thing for me that I thought about afterwards. I was like, we have the best sevens player in the world, right? And for some reason, the IRFU haven't even put him into a training setup in the 15s. One of the provinces, would you not just go, Terry, go in there for a couple of weeks, train with the team? Because you are the best player in the world in sevens rugby. Surely you're able to play a bit of ball. And if you look at New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, all these teams use sevens as
look,
like
Caleb Clark. Yeah. Look at us. Look at we did with Hugo Keenan. Like.
Exactly.
Unbelievable has he been for us?
Exactly. 100%. Same with Jordan Conroy last year. He was top try scorer in the world. So 2 years in a row, we've had two guys be top try scorer in the world for sevens rugby.
Get him in there.
And the IRFU haven't once gone, all right, let's see, can you play 15s? And I think Pat spoke to John Porch during the week, and John Porch obviously played Australian sevens. Yeah. Now he's one of the best wingers in the URC, and he was like, "Why isn't Terry Kennedy playing 15s?"
Mm. And he's a Mary's boy, am I right?
Yeah, Mary's. Yeah, so went to where did he go to school? He went to can't remember where he went to school now, but he definitely was a Mary's boy. And the thing is now he's gone down to Australia, going working now for a while. He said he might come back, play again, but at the moment, because obviously the money's not the greatest in the sevens setup, he has other better options to go work and like establish his career. He has a missus and stuff. So
it's a strange one. We take a note at Munster, lads. If Munster are watching this, take him. I mean, we could do with some more backs. I'd take the world sevens player of the year.
Absolutely.
The week.
If they stepped, if someone just stepped up and gave him a training contract, I know for a fact Terry would think about it. Like,
of course he would.
Maybe he could play a bit in Australia, do Mac Hansen and be pipped back.
Maybe
but I don't know that's what might happen, lads. He might slip away. Like, what age is he? He's not that old, is he?
He's only 25.
There's a go. We'd give him a chance. Give him a go.
For God's sake, he's
Keenan is what? Is he 26? Keenan only came into the set about 24, and now he's probably one of our most important players.
Yeah.
You know, so that's how quickly you can make a transition if you're good enough.
Imagine he started playing club rugby in Australia and ends up playing for Australia. Oh, no.
No, don't do that.
It's revenge for Ceelan MacKenzie is what that is.
No, I don't want to put a negative swing in it because, Joanne, it's a great night for Terry and great night for Josh, and it's unbelievable for Irish rugby. It's obviously in a really good place. And
the other guys getting in the dream team as well, I think, is great as well. I mean, obviously, you have also said it all season about how good Ty Byrne has been, and it's great to see Ty Byrne get in there. He's a guy for a long time kind of was overlooked by the international game. Took his time to get properly into the Ireland set up and become concrete, got onto the Lions tour. I think the world knows now. We always knew how good Ty Byrne is. The world knows now because no one objected to Ty Byrne beating that squad. You also had Tyke Furlong in there. Obviously, Johnny was in there and Josh van der Fleer. So, like, we've four players in the dream team, which is incredible. And
absolutely.
Player of the year and sevens player of the year. Not bad.
No.
It's unbelievable.
Irish eyes are smiling.
It's class.
But we'd give it all away for a World Cup.
We would give it all
in
away.
In the morning. Even a semi final.
Definitely.
We're going that far. We're going all the way. We want the trophy.
All right. No problem.
We won it, lads. The country would
We
shut.
Are so we set up for it now, guys.
Shut the country. I think the country would shut down for a month, essentially.
God. Yeah.
Just shut down. It's like, just give me some
more. Pandemic times again. Just no one down their house. Just celebrate for Ireland winning the
World Cup. Yeah. Well, all the lads that you mentioned a while ago that Jamie was saying, Josh, after a couple of days, his focus is back on Leinster and whatever. And Dan Sheehan was interviewed for the IRFU as well. And he said, it's great to be acknowledged, but like, all I really care about is just winning.
Hell yeah.
So like, I love that mindset. They're obviously just been drilled into them. It's team first. Which is
and
working.
You can see that with them. There's a lot of love amongst the players by the looks of their media. And, you know, they look very happy and relaxed. And I think that's what's helping the consistency of performance. Yeah. And Obviously, Andy Farrell, I think, brings in family members for first caps and jersey presentation, which is lovely. I think it's essential that he sees the players for who they are. So it seems a really, really good buzz and family spirit within that.
Yeah, he said they Irish celebrate bubble. First caps and 100 caps in the Irish camp. They bring family and friends in to celebrate it.
Isn't that lovely?
It's lovely. And his own son, Owen Farrell, got 100 caps on the weekend. He obviously wasn't there to watch the game, but he said he flew to meet him afterwards, so... Very nice, isn't
Another
it?
Man could have been in an Ireland jersey.
It's weird to see Andy Farrell with like emotions, I think, in relation to, oh, he's like really happy for his son. Yeah. But his son is Owen Farrell. Like,
I know. It's mad. It's so weird. It's so surreal.
It's so weird. Like, yeah, but it's cool. Congrats to Owen Farrell as well, getting 100 caps. But you were saying it there, Jason, the team of the year was announced.
Yeah.
We want to run through it. Well, I'll give the names pretty quickly. So the front row was Ellis Genge, Malcolm Marks, Tadhg Furlong. The second row was Tadhg Byrne, Sam Whitelock. Back row, Pablo Matera, Josh van der Fleer, World Player of the Year as well, Gregory Aldred, Anton Dupont was 9, Sexton 10, wingers were Corabetti and Will Jordan, Freddie Stewart at full back, and then the centres were Lucanio Am and Delande. So obviously an unbelievable team, but straight away for me, I would think Savea should probably been in there. There's an argument for that.
Yeah, I think what you would have done there, like I wouldn't take Aldreed out. So like I would have found a pace room and I would have put either Aldreed or Savea in at six and got the three of them in.
Yeah.
I think there's definitely a case there in the front row for Cyril Boy to be there ahead of Genge. I know Genge was phenomenal, but Cyril Boy, I think he was in the team of the week every week for the Six Nations for the Grand Slam. Yeah. I don't know what way it works. Yeah, it works off the calendar year, doesn't it? I think Etzebeth probably should have been in there over Whitelock.
One, yeah.
Maybe he's been absolutely incredible. Looking around, I think Corabete maybe a bit lucky to get in there. I think maybe Am a little bit lucky in there, because even though I know Am is incredible, if you look at, I think myself and Pat looked it up during the week, it was like he's only played like three tests in 2022.
Yeah, who are you putting
so
in?
So he should have been there. Do you know who's been absolutely sensational?
Gary.
Two players. Gary's a guy that could have got in there. Yeah. I think Rico Annie's been incredible. Jordy Barrett's been incredible.
Yeah.
So there is, like, come here, look. The only real one I would say that, like, it makes no sense that RDCVA isn't there. RDCVA should have been nominated for World Player of the Year. RDCVA should have been in the Dream Team of the Year. Yeah. He has been, even when New Zealand were bad, even against Ireland when we beat them. He dragged them back so many times.
Yeah.
He has been absolutely incredible. I think he could have almost even pipped Josh van der Fleer for the trophy, never mind not being nominated. Yeah.
Mentioned both of those lads. So van der Fleer was interviewed by us a couple of weeks ago and he was asked who's his favourite player in the world that he'd love to play with, and he said Ardie Sevilla.
Of course, man. Ardie Sevilla is the best eight in the world at the moment by a good bit, I think. I think personally. I think Aldreed is fantastic as well, but I just think, like, as I said, like, he's not even playing in a good New Zealand team at the moment and he still stands out and is the best player on the pitch every single bloody time to play.
Something,
it's hard to fathom.
Yeah, something notable as well is Malcolm Marks getting the hooker position and he doesn't even start for South Africa. He comes off the bench.
Yeah, but when he comes off the bench, by God, does he do damage. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was that famous game when he came off the bench and he like made like fucking five or six turnovers in like 20 minutes, whatever it was. I don't know what game it was, but he is a beast. I think they've even said it themselves in the past that he is their best hooker. But they just like having him off the bench.
It's the bomb squad thing.
That's what it is like. I mean, like the fear of God that we put into you. If you're like winning, if you're losing a game, or if you're slightly winning, and this guy comes
half
off
an
the
hour
bench
to go,
with two more, like someone like Kitchoff or Cock or someone else comes off the bench, like frightening. It's like terrifying. It's like, you know, it's like imagine us having like, I know we're going to have two class hookers going forward when the two boys are fit. Like, it's like having another Tadhg Furlong, another Andrew Porter on the bench to bring on alongside a Dan Sheehan or what's, I'm forgetting his name now, sorry. What's the Leinster hooker?
Heffernan.
Was our North Stand hooker?
Keller.
Ronan
like,
Keller.
It's like we have a Keller, which is class to come off. But imagine we had like a Keller, a Porter and a Furlong on the bench. As well as having a Sheehan and a Porter and a Furlong starting. That's the South Africa.
60th minute and you're absolutely goosed. And yeah, they come on to
in the front row of all places. Like,
you've gone through so much work and then you're like, oh, please, not you three.
Yeah.
One other thing just about the men's team. Freddie Stewart, I think, has been so consistent for England. I personally would have put Hugo Keenan in there. I just think he offers more. I think he's just as consistent and offers more. But what do you make of Freddie Stewart getting the 15?
He has been class. I mean, he's been particularly good in the Autumn Nations. Like, he got man to match. I don't think he got two man to matches. He got one anyway. But he's probably been England's best player, despite the fact that they haven't. I know, they haven't been playing well, but he has stood out. it's a tough one. Like you could have put Jordy Barton there as well at 15. You could have put Bowden Barton side there as well. Did like the 15 jersey is a tough one.
But you could have put Ramos in there as well.
You could have put Ramos in there. It's interesting to see like not a lot of French players getting in there, like considering how it's good they were. Considering like France have beaten South Africa, they've beaten New Zealand,
they've beaten
Australia, they've won a Grand Slam, and they were overlooked. Probably would have expected maybe in the centre someone like Fico or someone inside there.
It's the first time I think ever going a full calendar year without losing a game.
New history records, which is it's nice to see the French because they're their own worst enemy.
Yeah.
If we're fair to them, because they can be so petulant and moody. But look, it is great to it just brings it back. I think it's great. It's people's perception. I think it can be sometimes I'll be controversial here. Sometimes it can be political. Like you know, you can see the consistency, and I think sometimes you have to balance the books and the numbers, and that's fair enough.
Yeah.
You know, you're trying to reward everyone, but I think it's nice for people to get it. Ruhe Dumont got it for the women's 15s player. Ruby Toohey got the standout for the women's. So and then Wayne Smith got it. You know, so it was nice to see
the professor
himself coming in 6 months and cleaning up the mess, and then it goes on to win a World Cup. So I think, look, it's a great night for the players in it, but I'd say, you know, the rugby family and community, like, it's hard when players like Sabea aren't getting rewarded.
Yeah. I think Ruby too as well. Didn't she win Sevens Player of the Year? Or Sevens Breakthrough Player of the Year last year, the year before? So to go to be like, to win the Sevens Breakthrough, then go to 15s and win the 15s Breakthrough, like, almost straight away. That's bloody impressive, like.
Yeah, and she gave away her medal and she got a new one then at the awards.
She presented another one last night in Monaco. I loved her video after and her chat. The video was on the World Rugby Instagram and her chat. It's just so, she seems like such a genuinely nice person. Yeah.
She just, again, loves life and loves people. And so I don't know if you could see her chain was from the little one she gave her medal to. So they kind of swapped and she said, this is my medal now. And obviously didn't know the story, speaking to her dad, and the little girl was suffering from leukemia. So you forget that there's life outside sport, and sport brings such joy. And then that's just so special to be able to do that. And you know, shout out to her, and that's what we want to see. That's what sport brings for us, and no more so than rugby with its values. And you can see it, and that's what we want to be talking about, not, you know, players' health and wealth and everything like that. So listen, it's a great night. It's lovely to get suited and booted, but comes back.
Exactly,
We want trophies.
We want
well
the World
said,
Cup.
Lindsay, Well, you mentioned Dumont got the Women's 15s Player of the Year, Smith got the coach, Ruby Toohey, Breakthrough Player, Capuzzo got the Breakthrough Player for the men's.
What a
player. Great try against
Africa. Unfortunately, we missed out on our boy Mac, and Dan Sheehan didn't get it, like, but you can't take it away. That guy is a guy, if he keeps going on his current trajectory, he's a guy in 2 or 3 years' time could be in contention for World Player of the Year.
Yes.
I think there is no ceiling for him, like, because every time you see him play, you just like you want to see him get ball in hand and go, what's he going to do? He did it again. He scored another class try against South Africa the weekend, two against Australia.
Very intelligent tries as well. He's not just being handed them.
He knows what he's doing. Yeah. He runs these lines. He runs these arcs. And he just really, really good acceleration, really good hands. He's just, and he's not the biggest guy.
Tiny man,
you know what I mean?
But he waited for us in one of his tries. He waited for South Africans to shoot exactly
he made a fool of them.
He made a fool of them.
This is South Africa.
Very intelligent.
So, very intelligent.
Well done, Capuzzo. Keep it up. Just to run through the women's 15s team of 2022, we have Hope Rogers, Emily Totsi from Canada, Sarah Byrne, or the front row, Abby Ward, and Maduso Fall in the second row. Back rows, Alex Matthews, Marley Packer, and Sophie Degoody. Number 9 is Laurie Sansus. Number 10 is Ruhe Dumont. I'm pronouncing him okay, am I?
Ruhe Dumont, you're doing a great job.
Ruby Toohey on the wing with Portia Woodman on the other wing. Teresa Fitzpatrick at 12, Emily Scar at 13, and Abby Wow at 15. Do you agree with all that?
I'll be controversial. I think Emily Scar, look, the woman is world class. She's been so consistent for so long. I'm not sure. I think it was one of our quieter tournaments, if I'm honest. And I probably think, I'm not sure I would have her in that team. Sarah Byrne, probably was consistent in the front row. Sophie De Goida, I hope I pronounced her right. She was phenomenal for Canada. Her mom and dad both played internationally for Canada. And she plays international. Oh, I'm going to say hockey. She's an all-round athlete, like, and she just will stand out, to be honest, for Canada. Sansus, she was Six Nations Player of the Year. She was, I think, France were unlucky to lose her. Now, they did it great. Mamadou Fall, like, now when I say it's one person, you do not want to run that shit. Like, she, like, there's very few players I'd say I wouldn't stand in front of, but that woman is an absolute.
She'd hold her own in the men's game as well.
I swear to God, a specimen. I'm like, you nearly, you know that, you're like, okay, I'm in good position, wish me luck. Hopefully I won't die here. Wow. So, yeah, probably without being unfair, and I said, I think Emily Scar is absolutely world class, but probably is the only one I'd question there now, too, okay. If I'm honest, because I thought she was quiet.
Yeah, fair enough. Great to see Abby Dow getting in there as well after the year she had her injury.
Oh, her broken leg yeah.
And getting back and stuff. So
yeah, they got try of the year, I think, herself and Claudia McDonald. And obviously she had Clean on the show. That's her partner. So I thought that was unbelievable try. Who runs it out from your exit? Because normally England kick and they play together at Wasps. I don't know what Abby's doing, but I know Claudia's gone to Exeter. So yeah, like England had some nice moments and reward probably for being their 30 test game winning streak, you know, with a lot of nominations and giving the nods.
Great year for women's rugby, in fairness. So moving on to the Autumn Nations, the other games that were on. England, New Zealand played in Twickenham. With 8 minutes to go, England were 25-6 down. Thought the game was over, and they scored 3 tries in 8 minutes to draw 25-all. Great little comeback. And then Marcus Smith kicks the ball out.
Oh, I was watching that game. It was like, I mean, fair play to England. They came back with those 3 tries in 8 minutes, and they had New Zealand on the ropes. Two from Will Stewart and one from... We got the third one, was it Freddie Stewart? Freddie Stewart got the third one.
Bear in mind, when he kicked it out, they're still at 14 men.
But that's what I'm saying. They were at 14 men. You had them. Okay, you're playing... This is like... You're not playing for points or anything. This is, you know... It's a test match, right? It's an Autumn Nations series outside of a World Cup. I mean, what an opportunity and what a way. I mean, I think it's just... If I was an English fan looking at this, I'd be worried because... Here's an opportunity against 14 men All Blacks who you have on the ropes, who just scored 3 tries in 8 minutes. Go for it. Even if you lose it, it's the Autumn Nations. Like, if this happened at the World Cup, you're going to kick it out and wait for extra time?
No,
you're not. Like, I mean, are you though? I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's Eddie Jones's tactic and kind of go, maybe we have him in fitness or something and that's what they want. But I just was complete and utterly baffled. And I'm not trying to hate, in English, not trying to hate on Marcus Smith, but in that cauldron of a test match, playing against New Zealand, you have him on the ropes. Go for it.
Yeah, I feel like it wouldn't just been Marcus Smith's decision. I feel like Owen Farrell might have been like, right, get it off the pitch. Or one of the forwards would be like, I'm goose, kick it off. Something like that, I'm presuming, has happened. Why didn't it? Because they could have just played it out. They were going against 14 men. They had him on the ropes.
100%.
Why not? They're not playing for a World Cup either.
Exactly.
Like, you know?
It's just I think, it's a huge opportunity missed, I think.
I personally would have played it, like, obviously. But I think it was maybe an underlying, like, it's probably testament to a team that are probably lacking a bit of confidence. Like, they had a strong team out and they didn't perform. It was only until the replacements came on.
They were shocking for 70 minutes.
They were shocking. Like, you know, you had Cowan Dickey on, you had Genge, you had Sinclair, like Atoje. Like, these were big name guys who you'd normally think perform and would put it up to New Zealand. So I think to me, it was an England team worried about losing it, which again, these are what your Autumn series are for. You have to break in your backside to get back in contention. 14 men in New Zealand. Just play the ball. What have you got to lose?
I'd have more respect for them if they fought it out and New Zealand got a breakaway try and lost. I'd be like, they gave it a crack though. Like, fair play.
Yeah, exactly.
And at the end of the day, lads, Automation Series is great, but there's nothing on the line. Like,
no.
It's just playing a bit of rugby.
I think England are in trouble. I think, like, they've got huge problems at nine. I mean, Jack van Poortvliet was very
was
bad.
Poor, yeah.
Really
Man,
bad.
3 minutes in, he passes the ball to
really
Papalini.
But, like, and all they've got then is, like, they've got Ben Youngs coming there as well. Ben Youngs is over the hill, unfortunately. Like, he hasn't played a good game in England shirt in a long time. Very pivotal position. I'd worry for England. I really would. I think, like, and I think Jones is kind of overstayed himself to a certain extent. I think he just kind of looks like he's out of ideas.
Yeah, and he's actually rumoured now to be signing a big contract after World Cup with USA. Are we going to have
cash, cash money?
Exactly. Which we saw at Munster when Johan van Graan announced it really early that he was leaving. Do you know, is that going to have a big impact on the English team?
Announced officially? Has it been announced officially yet, or is it just rumours at the moment?
I think it could be rumours, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it got reported on Georgina Robinson and Sydney Morden Herald. She's got good connections. So
if that comes out and becomes be like official, then this close to World Cup, not good.
Not good.
What you're saying is Eddie Jones may be joining USA Rugby after World Cup. 8 years.
An eight-year contract, apparently.
What age is he?
Two big bags
money,
of money.
Money, money.
Oh my God, Eddie Jones, man. Stealing a living fella.
Yeah.
Nah. I'm only messing
around. You heard it here first.
I know you're listening to the podcast, Eddie. I didn't mean that, fella. You've done great stuff for rugby. But speaking of the English team, I do think they've unbelievable athletes, unbelievable players. You named a few of them there, yep. Toje, Cowan Dickey, all these guys, but they're just not being managed well, I don't think.
No.
And they have the potential. Now, they've a couple of months before the World Cup, obviously, have Six Nations before that. Get yourselves together, and they could really be in contention to compete for the World Cup because they have the players. But at the moment, they're a bit all over the place.
But who have they unearthed it? Like, we're talking about player depth for Ireland, and like, are you
going to? Not really. The only thing I'll say about England was, I said, I am a bit worried for England at the moment, but I will say they're probably one of the few teams in the world, given the depth that they have and the amount of players at their disposal, that they can get themselves together 3 or 4 weeks out from the World Cup and do well at the World Cup. Because, lads, the players they have, as you mentioned, are insane. Yeah. They have 3 or 4 top players in every position. So if he can get his tactics right, and if he can get his team right and his squad right, which is, you know, TBC, if he can, like they did at the last World Cup, they weren't exactly humming coming into the last World Cup and got to the bloody final.
I definitely think watch this space when it comes to England. There's still time to kind of pull it all together.
Yeah.
And there's chit-chats, there's a bit of murmurs that our very own Ron O'Gara, said he would be up for taking the English coaching role. He's on a shortlist with Steve Borthwick and Scott Robertson.
Don't do it, Rog. If you're listening, Rog, don't do it. Please, don't do
what
it.
What do we think of it?
Begging you, don't
there
do
is
it.
An unwritten rule as an Irish person, and you know that, Rog, that is... Do not take that job.
Especially Rog. Like, Rog is a proud Irishman, and he always has been a proud Irishman. And I would just be, look, at the end of the day, in terms of a business and a career decision, it's a huge job. And that's exactly what he said. It's a big job. It is a huge job.
Be so
and
good for his career.
If England had the opportunity to get someone on board like Ronan O'Gara, he is probably one of the best coaches in the world at the moment. And he's proved that time and time again. He's done it. He's been in done some international work with Ireland in the past. He's been in camps with Joe Smith. He's obviously won the European Cup in his, I don't know, was it a second full season? Was it a third full, second full season, whatever, with La Rochelle? First full season as a head coach. He did won a top 14 coming in and got promoted from kicking coach to defence coach at Racing. He's done everything. He's done everything. And I think he'll be in contention. I personally think, and I'm not just saying it, like, as in, please don't take Rog, because we want him for Ireland. If he goes to England, that just kind of makes that more difficult for us to get him eventually. But I do think Borthwick is the obvious choice there for them, because he's working week in, week out in the Premiership with Leicester. He's done an incredible job with them. He's been an England coach before. I think for them, it makes more sense to hire Borthwick, and I hope to hire Borthwick, because stay away from
if we just take England, the name England, out of the equation, I'd be delighted. From fair play, Rog, take it's great for your career. So I've a solution.
Okay, hit me.
Wales lost to Georgia at home, so Wayne Pivac's precarious situation with his job in Wales.
He is, absolutely.
Rog, go work for Wales if you want. I'd be okay with that one.
That's fine.
Wales or Scotland, okay.
Wales or Scotland, it's fine.
I
with
thought
that.
You were going to say Georgia there.
No.
I think Rog is too big for the Wales job.
Oh, well.
Do you think it's a tactic, though? He's kind of like, you know, little like love triangle here. He's kind of using the England job as a kind of like, you know, someone else wants me here.
Well, like,
Ireland,
look, let's
Munster.
Be realistic. Like he's not going to go to Munster, right? Like, he's not going
to
go back because...
Please
I think
go to Munster.
No, but if you went back to Munster, he's boxed himself into a corner there.
Of course.
It's a very tough thing, because if that doesn't go well for him, and... As he said in the past, well, he doesn't want to go back to Munster as long as there's guys in the squad that he's played with or guys that he knows.
That's fair enough.
Which is
hard.
Difficult. And with the Ireland job, I mean, like, I'm sorry, like, as good as O'Gara is, like, you ain't sacking Andy Farrell at the moment. You ain't sacking Andy Farrell for a long time. And he's just signed a contract extension. So even if O'Gara wanted the Ireland job now, it's not going to be available for a while. And
could you bring him in as part of the... coaching team, or is that
don't
a step
think,
down?
I think that's a step. I think he's proven
now
he's a head coach. I do think it's... It is a matter of time, like, and it's not just wishful thinking. It does make sense. I mean, he's over in France now. He's got about 15 children, I think, Pat, or something like that, isn't he? Will Skelton was saying that on the podcast last week, but like, he's got like 5 kids and stuff, like, and he is a very proud Irishman. He will end up back here at some stage when it makes sense for him and when it makes sense for the IRFU to come back.
Do you know what I'd say? Roger's just having a bit of fun ruffling some feathers. Like,
that's what I think. I think he's just playing a bit of...
He can do what he wants. Like,
bit of emotional, you know, chess. Yeah.
We'll always love you though, Rog. Whatever you
except
do, fella.
Except if you take the English. Except
no, I'll still love you, fella. Don't worry about that. As we kind of touched on there, Georgia beat Wales 13 points
Georgia.
To 12 in Wales' home turf in Principality Stadium. Obviously sad for Wales, but unbelievable for rugby as a whole. Georgia to come in and beat a top-tier nation like that. And I just think it kind of touches on that Georgia's setup is really good. Their underage teams are really good. 18s, 19s, 20s. They always kind of thereabouts in the World Cup. Obviously, they haven't really won any of them. But it's coming through now. And to beat Wales at home, incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just lovely for the world of rugby to see that, you know, again, we're not only depth in squad, that the depth of competition is really, you know, we're seeing emerging nations like really coming to the fore now. And it just makes questions, could we extend like the Six Nations, could we extend, you know, and you're getting good quality test games against teams that are unknown, so your prep is really key. Like, so yeah, congratulations Georgia, but again, we have Wales and we're talking about Wales for all the wrong reasons.
If you look back on the overall fixtures in the Autumn Nations, like, there's probably, you go back over the years, you never would have seen what you saw in 1 month. Saw Argentina beating England, you saw Australia beating Italy, now you've seen Georgia beating Wales. This is what we've been clamouring for years. Yep. We want to see these lower teams brought up so that we can... I think personally, especially like we were already saying off air there, but the fact that we've got Tonga in our group in the World Cup next year alongside Scotland and South Africa. Tonga have got the likes of Fekitoa coming in for them. They've got... they've got Piatau coming in for them. They have Israel Folau. I think it's probably going to be the most competitive World Cup in history. In fact, it is. I'm saying it now. It is going to be the most competitive Rugby World Cup in history. And there is going to be some scalps.
Big scalps.
There's no easy games anymore, really. Like, now that when Ireland go play Italy in the Six Nations, that's not an easy game.
No.
It's not a walkover.
But that's like what we want, because, like, I mean, as I said, you look back those over the years, going out and putting 60, 70 points past Italy.
That's not a thing
what is
anymore.
That for Ireland? Like, and you go and you throw out your B team or whatever. What you want is competitive, high-level test matches, week in, week out, so that you are battle-hardened, battle-ready, prepared for the Rugby World Cup, and that's what's killed us in the past.
Yeah,
that's what it hurts a lot of teams.
Yeah,
we need it, and it's brilliant for us, and it's brilliant for the game. We want this rugby as much as we like to, because we're in the inner circle. Rugby is a niche, and is forever and will forever be a niche unless we get level parity with the rest of the teams.
Yeah.
We want this game to become a global sport. We said it at the top of the show. Fix the discipline side of things. Second of all, let's get it more competitive. We want this sport to be global. How many people, even despite everything that's going on, how many people are going to be tuning in to watch the World Cup in Qatar compared to what are going to people that watch rugby? And we want more eyes. We want more butts and seats, essentially.
Yeah, and think about the, like, World Cups is that you get to cross over with just different nationalities. And think now with the amount of probably nations that will travel that would have, you know, probably not bothered.
Yeah.
You know,
way so low.
Absolutely.
Sounds like fun.
Listen,
go.
I think three of us will go. We'll bring the show
I
there.
Go.
What, Pat?
It's supposed to be a hell of a place to go. Like, so, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, so that's what we want. It's
World Rugby's in a great place for sure, 100%. Yeah. And just some other games that happened over the weekend. Scotland beat
Argentina
52-29.
Finn Russell
was just on a different level. Like
the Maverick.
Man, he was cutting through like a hot knife through butter.
I saw a great one on that actually, just quickly, was he was his first child was being born, and he literally just met it, like literally onto a plane after the match to go get his missus and get into the maternity ward after like playing an absolute stormer, and like knowing that in the back of your mind, kind of going, I might miss the birth of my child. And he still came out, was the absolute boss. And thankfully, good news story, he made it.
Yeah. What do you have, a little burger?
I'm not sure if he was a little boy. I'm not sure. I just kind of read it
quickly.
Congratulations, Finn and his Mrs. Emma. That's a massive, great day for them. After that was Italy. Had a great game against Springboks, the world champions. They held them for 30 minutes. They were actually leading 13 points to 10.
Yeah.
And then Springboks brought on all their boys. And
the scoreline didn't reflect that game. If you watched the full game, like, they were like, it was a good first half. It was close. They just kind of like, they scored a couple of tries and then just fell apart. And
yeah, they did.
If you look at it, like, you'll think, oh, South Africa absolutely steamrolled them. They didn't. They beat them well.
They bullied them at times, and they really.
But they weren't poor. Like,
Italy's offloading was unbelievable. And I think that's the evolution of Italian rugby. They're not now just, you know, basically bringing it to ruck. They're actually trying to keep the ball moving.
Yes.
And that makes the game a whole lot different. So,
100%. Yeah. Well, holding the world champions or even beating them after 30 minutes is brilliant. And then obviously, hopefully now with time, they'll be able to hold it on a bit longer. Like, do you know what I mean? Italy. But well done, guys. Arense had 4 tries in that game. But a bigger kind of moment after it was Bruno proposed to his missus on the pitch.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Sorry. I was cringing in a way. I was like, I'm delighted I'm not her.
I know.
She seemed to love it and she said yes. So,
she said yes. Congratulations, you know what I mean? Bruno. I think he's a local man. It was on in Genoa, I believe, was it?
Genoa. Yeah.
Genoa. And he proposed and she said yes. So
the romantic Italians.
Romantic Italians, yeah. Oh. Congratulations,
lads.
France beat Japan then 35-17. Japan put up a good fight, but France are just too good. It was a wet day over there.
Yeah.
terrible conditions, a bit like this miserable Monday morning.
Yeah, exactly.
France unbeaten now for the first time. Is it, Pat, you were saying first time ever they've gone in a calendar year unbeaten?
Yeah, you guys were saying, yeah.
We said already, did we? Fantastic.
Yeah, good stuff, France. And then finally, a huge congrats to Portugal for reaching the World Cup. So they're going to be playing over in France next year in the World Cup. They drew at USA 16-all, I think. And that was enough to give them that final spot.
Great stuff. Good stuff for Portugal. Another game, look, we want to see these emerging nations into the World Cup, don't we?
Yeah. If everyone's feel good, there's obviously clips on Twitter. Go and see them, because there's just like Portuguese fans and players absolutely losing their life and crying, and it does bring a tear to a glass eye. So congratulations, Portugal.
I remember seeing them in the World Cup a good few years back. Might have been 2011, the last time they were in it, and they got beaten by 100-something points to 7 against the All Blacks. Stop. But they scored a try at the end, and they celebrated like they won the World Cup. They were so happy to score a try against the All Blacks. And I like seeing that. Like, it's,
they're
good
a lovely
to see.
Nation, actually. They're lovely people, the Portuguese.
If they get good lads, it means away trips to Portugal, even better.
Yeah.
You know, Lisbon,
that's
all
grand.
Day long.
Put that on the list,
yeah,
Pat.
There
Lisbon.
We go. Let's get these emerging nations. Hot countries only, please.
Yeah. Congrats. Congrats, Portugal. And to kind of wrap up this episode, we need to give our Never Stop Competing moment away together with Bank of Ireland. And we're giving it to our very own Ross Byrne, who came on cool as cucumber, slotted that kick. Didn't seem like it fazed him.
No.
But good to see him coming back into the Irish jersey after so long, kind of being out of favour. He just kept plugging away, and he's where he's supposed to be. I just shout out to you, Ross. Well done, fella. You get a Never Stop Competing moment of the week. Boom. Together with Bank of Ireland. And other than that, guys, that's us for the week, I think.
Pleasure as always. I love starting my week off with you two lads.
Fantastic. Yeah. You too.
Thanks, Lindsay. Thanks, Jason. And thanks, of course, to Bank of Ireland. Proud supporters of the four Irish provinces. We'll catch you next week, guys.
Joe presents House of Rugby, together with Bank of Ireland, proud supporter of the four Irish provinces.